This is Equestrian Legacy Radio.
He was the new kid on the circus, gold buckles in his eyes. But the horse he drew was plenty rank, and much to his surprise, he did a double backflip, landed on his head. This old cowboy limped out in the ring, leaned over him and said, "You better cowboy up when you get thrown down. Get right back in the saddle as soon as you hit the ground. You've heard that the tough gets going when the going gets tough. But around here all we say is, son, you better cowboy up." By the end of last season, said he was among the best, so he proudly called the girl back home, hoping she would be impressed. But her mama said she married the guy he used to call his friend. And before the first tear could fall, these words came back again: "You better cowboy up when you get thrown down. Get right back in the saddle
to Equestrian Legacy Radio, and I'm your host, Gary Holt. Today around the Campfire Cafe, we're joined by Gene Prescott, past Academy of Western Artist Entertainer of the Year, and Jim McGarvey, Chairman of Backcountry Horsemen of America. Campfire Cafe is brought to you by our great sponsors in the General Store and the gallery at East of Santa Fe. You'll find everything for the horse lover and folks that love the equestrian lifestyle in the gallery at East of Santa Fe and in the General Store at EquestrianLegacy.net. Grab a cup of coffee and join us, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Gene Prescott.
The days are getting longer, early spring has shown its face. The mudroom's clean and orderly, supplies are in their place. Then suddenly it happens on a crisp and chilly morn. We go into action 'cause our first calf is born. Not much we could do. Mudroom needs a scrubbing. There's bottles in the sink. And after what those calves brought in this place, it really stinks. It's having time. We're working night and day. We've waited all year long. We're ready come what may. Life is a cycle. short. You can't get in the mudroom, this place is one big mess. Why anyone would live like this is anybody's guess. Watching the place today, cause hubby's gone to town. He went off to a bull sale, it's like an endless chain. We'll breed those cows for next year, then we'll do it all again. Cause it's cabin time round here. Yeah.
Gene Prescott has been called the songbird of the prairie. Her album, Tapestry of the West, was the Academy of Western Artists Western Album of the Year. She's been Entertainer of the Year, Female Vocalist of the Year, and she was honored by the Texas State Legislature for her musical contribution toward the preservation of Texas music and history. And Gene, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Gary. It's my pleasure to be with you today.
Well, we're so happy to have you joining us, and glad you're feeling well, because I know you've been a little bit under the weather, and so we're just tickled that you're able to join us and share your music with us. And we'd like to start out talking just a little bit about your early background with horses, because I know you're a horsewoman and a cowgirl for real. But tell us a little bit about those early days.
Well, my first horse was a little two-year-old. It's kind of a funny story. This gentleman brought out to us. My mother bought him for me, a little two-year-old gelding, and a guy showed up in a Volkswagen minibus with the back half of it cut out and this sorrel gilding standing in the back of it. And
oh,
he
man.
Pulled up to our place, and I thought, there's my horse. And he's in a Volkswagen minibus.
Oh.
But that was the beginning of a very long and wonderful relationship with a little sorrel gilding named Prince. And we went all over the country barrel racing and trail riding and just, you know, having a great time. It's one of those every teenager's dream, you know, is to have a horse like that. And I was sure blessed with him. And that kind of got me started with my horses. And I haven't been without a horse in all these years. And we have a pasture full out there today.
Oh, that's great. Well, you know, I've hauled horses in the back of a pickup truck and I've ridden them to town because I didn't have any way to get them there besides that. But I don't think I've ever tried to put one in the back of a Volkswagen, so that's pretty cool. That is pretty cool. Well, now, you told me something the other day that was kind of interesting about the way that you raised money for your entry fees when you were competing. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we had chickens, and we had various cattle and horses and chickens and turkeys and all kinds of farm animals and that sort of thing. So in order for me to raise money to enter barrel races, my mother would let me have the egg money. So I had to collect the eggs and wipe them off and put them in the egg cartons, and then I would sell eggs to the neighbors, you know, in the country there and save that up. And when I got enough money ahead, I could enter a barrel race somewhere. So that's how I got started with it and paid my little entry fees.
Oh, well, that's great. Well, you know, I think it's great that kids kind of have to do their part to be able to enjoy the horse sport. And too many times today, kids are spoiled a little bit. They just, you know, mom and dad buy them a horse and they pay for their entry fees. And so I think that's a great way to grow up. What part of the country did you grow up in, Jing?
Well, I was born in Amarillo, and then when I was about three, we moved down to Big Spring, Texas, which is further west Texas than where we live now in Abilene. And we bought a place out in Glasscock County a few years later and moved out there, and that's where I grew up, riding horses and helping the neighbors, you know, on the ranches and what have you. Just a little country girl out there. We didn't have a television, so that's probably one reason I learned to play the guitar. Wasn't much else to do out there.
Oh, that's cool. Well, now, you told me an interesting story about how you learned to play. And how did you do that, and when did you get started with your playing?
When I was about 16, a young lady came to stay with us for a few months, and she had a little Montgomery Ward guitar, one of those little red guitars, and it came with a Mel Bay chord book. And she played about 3 days until her fingers got pretty sore, and then she decided she was not interested in playing that guitar. And so I took a look at it, and I opened that chord book and read a little bit, and I thought, you know, I believe I could do this. So that started my guitar playing, and like I said, we didn't have a television, so I would be up early in the morning, and I would play all day until just before my parents came in, and then I'd run around and clean the house up and straighten things up before they got home. But but all summer long, you know, that first summer, I played that guitar and played with the radio. You know, once I learned the chords, then I would listen to country songs on the radio and play along with them. And but my mother shortly thereafter bought a little Gibson guitar for me, and I still have that little guitar today. Wonderful little guitar. She bought it in, I guess, 1965.
Wow. Well, you know, you mentioned a couple of things maybe some people are not familiar with today, and that was Montgomery Ward. You know, I don't guess we've got any of those. They were kind of like the Sears stores and the, you know, some of the Sears and Roebuck back in those days, but that's a pretty interesting way to get started. Did you start performing at an early age?
Well, yes. I started performing at school in you know, shows that they would have, little evening things that the school would put on, talent shows and that sort of thing. And then some friends of my parents played music, and they would play for nursing homes and hospitals, so they invited me to come along with them. So I began, you know, playing out a little bit. By the time I was 17, I was going around playing here and there, and I just really, really thought I had hit the big time.
Well, who were some of your early musical influences?
Well, the early ones, especially in that time, was Loretta Lynn was really coming on about that time, and she was a big influence on me. Patsy Cline, Tammy Wynette, Patsy Montana, definitely. And, you know, just a lot of those country singers and Merle Haggard, you know, those country guys. I didn't really get started playing cowboy music. I learned how to play songs. I learned Red River Valley and things like that when I was learning to play the guitar. But then I went on and played the country songs for quite some time and didn't really get into my roots, the cowboy songs, until about 1990.
Okay. Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. I have fun telling folks this story, but my dad had the old 5- and 10-cent stores, you know, the dime stores.
Oh, yeah.
And he had a couple of stores in Nashville. And back years ago, radio stations would come in and set up remote broadcast, you know, in some of the stores. And one of the big stations in Nashville at the time was Weno Radio. And we were right on one of the main highways coming out of Nashville. And Patsy Cline would stop in to kind of promote her records. because, you know, they hadn't made it big yet, and they were still trying to get things promoted, so she'd stop in, and as well as some other stars.
Oh,
but I remember that Patsy Cline was one of those artists that would stop by to see if they could play her 45s back at that time. So it's kind of an interesting thing. But she has been a tremendous influence on a lot of people, as well as Loretta. And it's amazing how many people that will mention Patsy Montana that had such a big influence on their life.
Yeah.
So, well, when did the bug hit for you to start performing professionally?
When I was about 18, I met a gentleman by the name of Don Toll, and Don had played with Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys, and he encouraged me, and he was kind of giving me some guitar lessons, and they had a little band, and so he asked me if I'd like to come out and on Saturday night and just sing with the band, you know, maybe for one or two sets. So that's when the bug really got me to really start singing. And so I would go out to this club there on Saturday night and take my little Gibson guitar, which didn't have a pickup in it, and I would stand over to the side and play my guitar along with them, and then Don would say, "Now let's get our little girl singer up here to do a song for us." So I would step up to the mic, and I would sing a song, and then I'd go back to my spot, you know, and I have some great memories of those times.
Oh, goodness. Well, did you do a combination of the country music as well as the Western, or, you know, was it early on that you decided you want to follow the Western genre?
You know, I did a little combination of the two. I did more country than anything else, but I did some of the cowboy songs and the Western songs, and it wasn't until about, I believe it was 1988, I was in Alpine, Texas, and they were having the Texas Cowboy Poetry Gathering, and I think it was their second one. It was right there at the very beginning, and I didn't know that was going on. I was at a restaurant, and there were a lot of cowboys there. It was a Friday afternoon, and they weren't working because they were at the restaurant, and they had their clean white shirts on, and they were dressed up, you know, and they were in town, and I thought, something's going on here, and I'm going to find out what it is. So when they got up to leave, I left about the same time, so I just decided I'd just drive the same direction as they were to kind of see what was going on.
Right.
And I wound up at Sol Ross University there in Alpine. There were just hundreds of people there. And so I saw a large group of people going into this one building, so I just followed them in and went into one of the classrooms and sat down. And lo and behold, you know, I mean, there were people like Waddy Mitchell and Joel Nelson and some of the great cowboy poets of our time reciting poetry. And then I went to the theater, and there were people singing cowboy songs that, you know, my dad would sing when I was a little kid, and I just fell in love with it. So that was the beginning of my changeover from country to just pure cowboy and Western music. By 1993, I was traveling quite a bit, you know, playing cowboy music and just loving it.
Right. Well, now, I had Waddy on the show maybe a couple of months ago, and because it was fun when he started talking about the first national cowboy poetry gathering that they did.
Yeah,
he said that they set out about 200 chairs, thinking that was going to be plenty, and before they got finished, they had to find about 2,000 more to get set out for that thing. But he said, what a great problem to have. And then he said, you know, if you ever make it to Elko one time, you'll come back every year. So,
oh, absolutely. Elko is just the best.
Yeah. Well, we want to take just a quick break. We'll introduce folks to some more of your terrific music. And this is one called Grandpa's Dream. Is there a story behind this song, Gene?
Well, a friend of mine from Mountain Air, New Mexico, by the name of Leon Autry, wrote that song. And Leon is one of those salt of the earth ranchers, ranched out there for many, many years. And he just so wanted to pass on that ranching heritage to others. And that's how this song came about. He just really desires to see the young people come on up and take over the ranching duties, you know, for parents and grandparents and keep those ranches going. And that's how this song came about.
All right. Well, let's listen to Grandpa's Dream by Jeannie Prescott. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio. We'll be back in a moment to talk more with Jean Prescott.
Grandpa, what will they do with your saddle? Who will be wearing your spurs? And who will use your old bridle when your time is done on this earth? Sometimes I think of you, Grandpa, when looking out the window at school. Often my mind starts to wonder, what would life be without you? Who's gonna carry on? Who's gonna ride for this friend? These questions cause me to ponder, who's gonna care for this land? Grandpa, I could sure use your old saddle. I've been thinking and I have a plan. If I could use your spurs and old bridle, I could take care of this land. Who's gonna carry on? Who's gonna ride for this friend? There is no need to wonder, Grandpa, I will take care of this land. His granddaughter so strong and sweet. He found peace and comfort in knowing his life and his dreams were complete. She said, I'm gonna carry on. I'm gonna ride for this friend. Grandpa, there's no need to wonder. I will take care.
That's Grandpa's Dream by Jean Prescott. And, Jean, this is from your Traditions album, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Well, it's a great song. And let me just go ahead and mention right now that the fastest climbing album on the Western Way charts is Traditions. And I think there are four of your songs that are in the top 10 right now. So that's quite a feat. That's quite an accomplishment.
Oh, I'm just thrilled. Yes.
But was there a thought behind doing this particular album and naming it Traditions? Because listening to this song, it just seems like there probably was.
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, I was working on some songs for a presentation that I was going to be doing with Red Steagall. And it was called Ride for the Brand. That was the theme of the show. And I needed three songs that would, you know, encompass riding for the brand. And I wanted to bring the female perspective into that. So I began and I wrote those songs, and I thought, you know, I need to go ahead and just do a new album. And with those songs and then the Traditions song and Grandpa's Dream, it just really got me to thinking about the traditions of the ranching traditions and the Western traditions that we've passed on down the years, and how, you know, those are in danger of fading away if we don't keep those going. And just like the brandings and when people are calving on the ranches, you know, there's just there's traditions and there's ways that you prepare for these things. And so that became my mission with this project, just to talk about handing down our traditions and our heritage to the future generations, and just keeping family traditions going,
you know, right?
Just, things like that, and how just to let people know how important those things are to our children, because those are our roots, and that's what keeps us grounded, and in our Western lifestyle.
Well, it's and it's very true that I think we are in danger of losing we're in danger of losing our ranching heritage and our farming heritage as well. And people need to be aware of the importance of the American farmer and the American rancher in our economy and in just providing for the food sources here. But just the tremendous
Absolutely.
The tremendous
yeah.
heritage and legacy that's left by the people that have worked the land and the livestock and it's a lifestyle. I mean, it's a way of life if you're involved in that.
It is. It really is. And there's nothing better than to go to the Texas Cowboy Poetry Gathering in Alpine, or go to the Western Heritage Classic in Abilene, or any of the ranch rodeos, and you see these young families, you know, the dad and maybe a couple of little boys walking along there, and those little guys have their hats on and their crease just like dads, you know. And
right.
It's just so encouraging to see these families and know that, you know, they're still out there and they're passing down those traditions.
You know, one of the neat things that I'm seeing happening right now in the horse world is that in a lot of the AQHA competitions, one of the biggest classes and fairly new is the ranch horse competition.
Yes, I'm so excited about that.
Yeah, it's, you know, these horses are not in their silver, you know, and they're
right.
out there actually performing the acts that a ranch horse has to do every day when they're out on the range,
mm-hmm.
working cattle and working the ranch. So that's pretty cool stuff. You know, another part of that too, and you and I were talking about that just before we started the show, is the fact that there are and there is a need for so many young people today to start becoming involved in the Western music, because the cowboy music really is the folk music of today, I think.
It is. It absolutely is. You know, people ask me a lot of times, they just assume I play country music, and so I have to explain that it's not country music. It's, you know, I can say it's cowboy and Western music, or I can say it's Western Americana, or cowboy
mm-hmm.
folk music, you know, and that kind of helps them a little bit. And it is exciting to see a young generation coming up and getting a hold of this great music and just carrying it on.
Well, we want to play another song from this Great Traditions album, and that's Branding Day. And this kind of paints a picture for folks that may not know what goes on and what's involved in the day-to-day activities and that exciting time of the year. But let's listen to Branding Day, and when we come back, we're going to talk more with Jean, and we're going to find out how we can purchase her music and where you can see her live and performing. So this is Branding Day. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio.
Excitement builders' plans are made for Branding Day each year. The rancher wife starts making plans for all the things she's gonna cook. Biscuits, beans, and steak and gravy, fried taters piled up high, green beans from summer's garden, homemade cakes and pie. They'll wash it down with iced tea and coffee with dessert. And with a thank you, ma'am, they'll tip their hats and get back out to work. He lines up vaccine bottles, she bakes a dozen pies. The day before they'll set up pins, she'll feed a dozen guys. Then finally Brandon Day arrives, he's lined up quite a bunch. She'll cook dinner and supper, along with that there's lunch. Biscuits, beans, and steak and gravy, fried taters piled up high, green beans from summer's garden, homemade cakes and pie. They'll wash it down with iced tea and coffee with dessert. And with a thank you, ma'am, they'll tip their hats and get back out to work. Of course, the more help he has, the more she has to do. It takes a lot of beef and beans to feed a brand new crew. After hauling chairs and tables and working several days, Brandon's finally over and she crawls in bed and prays. If I should die before I wake, I pray I never have to bake another cake, another pie on that big ranch way up in the sky. But soon the rooster's crowing and fresh new day begins, and it won't be long till next year when it's Brandon Day again. Biscuits, beans, and steak and gravy, fried taters piled up high, green beans from summer's garden, homemade cakes and pie. They'll wash it down with ice tea and coffee with dessert. With a thank you, ma'am, they'll tip their hats and get back out to work. With a thank you, ma'am, they'll tip their hats and get back out to work.
Well, I just wanted to say yee-haw at the end of that song. That just had me just a big smile on my face, and I was kind of stomping my feet just a little bit as I was listening to that. That's a great song. Gene, you know, half an hour goes by pretty quickly when you're having a good time, and I can't believe we've already gone through the first half hour of the show. I hope it hadn't been slow for you, but it's really flown by for me. And let's talk a little bit about where folks can find your music.
Well, you can go to my website, which is GenePrescott.com, and order CDs off of the website. You can order individual songs off of the website. You can also purchase my CDs on CD Baby and iTunes, Amazon, lots of places out there.
Well, we're going to encourage folks to do that, and I look better on the radio than I do on TV, but I'm going to tell you, Jean is a pretty lady. You go visit her website, and if you're just listening, you can see what a pretty smile she has, and just a very talented lady, and I appreciate so much you spending time to visit with us. I hope you'll come back again and talk with us another time.
Oh, I'd love to.
And by the way, you're on Facebook as well, so I know I like to have a lot of likes on my page. I'd encourage folks to go visit Gene Prescott Music on Facebook and like that page and keep up with Gene and where she's going to be there as well. And are you? Can we see you anywhere anytime soon?
Well, I'm going to be in Sterling, Colorado, the 30th of this month, actually, for a Cowboy Up Ministries 20th reunion. My husband, Gary, will be with me, and we'll be doing a little concert there at the park in Sterling. And then I'm going to be in Pierre, South Dakota, at the Dakota Western Heritage Festival. And that is going to be September the, I believe that's the 13th that I'm going to be over there.
Okay.
It's going to be a great show, and I really want to mention the Home on the Ranch gathering in Wickenburg, Arizona, October the 3rd through the 5th. I'm going to be out there, and it's It's lots of talented women converging on Wickenburg with music and poetry and horsemanship and artistry, just a fabulous gathering. I hope folks will load up and come on to Wickenburg to see us out there.
Well, that's great. Is Belinda Gale going to be there for that?
She is. Yes, she'll be there for that.
Yeah, well, Belinda's just a super lady as well, and so let me encourage people to put that on their calendar.
Yes.
But go to Jean's website, follow her tour date there, and you can see a schedule of where she's going to be. And we look forward to having you back on again. And we're talking about the fact that the Cyber Ghost got some of your music that we didn't get to play. So we look forward to introducing some folks to some more of your great songs next time you're on the show.
Great. I appreciate it. I sure look forward to it, Gary.
All right. Well, Jean, thank you so much. Look forward to talking to you soon.
All right. You have a great day.
You too. We'd like to remind folks that the Campfire Cafe is brought to you by our great sponsors at the General Store and at the gallery at East of Santa Fe. You can find them on our website at equestrianlegacy.net. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Jim McGarvey, the chairman of Backcountry Horsemen of America, and we'll be talking about a legacy that's worth saving. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio.
Sun goes down.
On Down the Canyon, that's Ian Tyson with one of his classic songs. And Jim McGarvey is the chairman of Backcountry Horsemen of America. And since he has been chairman in the last several months, we have seen a whole new look and face to Backcountry Horsemen of America. Jim, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Gary. Good to be on. Thank you very much.
Always happy to have you on. And, you know, there are a lot of things that are happening with Backcountry Horsemen of America. We want to talk about some of the legislation a little bit later that's pending and what that means to folks. But you just finished, not too long ago, a very successful crowdfunding campaign. And we talked a little bit about that as it was in progress, but kind of update us on how that turned out and what was the purpose for that.
Thanks, Gary. We started planning it towards the end of last year. Explain to some of the folks what crowdfunding means. It's a new concept that's only been out a couple of years, if that. And the idea is that you're able to raise money in the social media, if you will, rather than an envelope in the mailbox type of fundraising that we're used to over the years. And through contacts, through ease of use at a website. In this case, we use a website company called Indiegogo. It's the second largest, and it's the largest that does for 501(c)s. And the way it works is you get your message out to your group or to others, and in this case, all the trail users, the horse trail users, and the Backcountry Horseman members, and invite them to come to site, see a video, read our story, and then we had you know, opportunities for giving starting at $25 to $5,000, and with that, we gave incentives from luggage tags to for, and up to $5,000 was a week in the wilderness in Oregon, and there were other trips. My wife Cindy and I are giving one ride with the chairman in the Smoky Mountain National Park here in a couple of weeks with some folks from Nevada, and we're looking forward to that. But it's a new way of doing things. People raise money for startups, so it's a capitalistic approach to raising money, all different kinds of things. It's worth going and just investigating sites like Indiegogo and that. For example, the fellows that started Google, they own one of the sites,
right.
One of these type of sites. And so it's a good way to go. We kicked it off at our national board meeting in Chattanooga, which we had live streamed for our folks, and on the Friday night, last Friday of April, and went through to June 9th. We had hoped to raise, our goal was $50,000, and a foundation that asked to be remain anonymous, but is helping us over the years, did a challenge grant of $25,000 if we hit 50. Well, we hit that, and we hit $75,021 plus there were 25, so we went to $100,000. So,
oh wow!
It was really successful. I think it shows the enthusiasm of our folks and the horse people. We had a lot of our chapters donated, and so what we're doing with the funds, there's a cost to doing this, of course, with the gifts and credit card fees, even those type of things. But
right.
We are giving $25,000 of it to be shared with our chapters in filing for grants to our Backcountry Horsemen of America Foundation. And the information for that will be coming out to the folks pretty shortly, and have a good part of the rest of the year to apply for different things at the local chapter level. And also, with the balance, we've been upgrading a lot of things with our whole organization. And the issues are becoming looming larger for us also, and we'll get into that in a few minutes. So it just takes funds to keep fighting the good fight for our trails, and so we're going to devote our funds in that direction and keep working in the future for that type of thing. You know, it's important, and often we're the vanguard horse organization out there. And to run with the big dogs, it costs a little bit more. So
it costs a little money. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
And so, but we're very. That's just so exciting. It was so much fun. A lot of work. Warning, but the tries is to do it right. It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun seeing all the communication going on among our. You know, we're in 29 states with 174 chapters, and so it was a lot of fun. So.
Well, that's great. Well, you know, we encourage people to become involved with Backcountry Horsemen of America. And if folks haven't been to the website, it's Backcountry Horse, isn't it?
Yeah, backcountryhorse.com and .org, but Backcountry Horse, yes.
Okay, backcountryhorse.com or .org, and the website's great. I mean, just a tremendous facelift to that in the last, you know, several months, and easy to navigate, a lot of great information there. But I continue to tell people that regardless of whether you're a trail rider or if you're involved in with horses at all, Backcountry Horsemen is an organization that you need to get involved with, because without our trail system and access to the trails by our trail riders, a market for horses that might not be participating in the arena or sports horse activities, there's not a place to go with those horses. And there are a lot of trail riders out there today. I would say 90% of the folks that are involved with horses are on the trails to
mm-hmm.
some extent. So
right.
Backcountry Horsemen is the organization that is kind of leading the way on making sure that we continue to have access to trails and we don't lose any and maybe can gain some in some places. But I believe that the chairman has a pretty good partner in his spouse, because I almost believe Cindy kind of comes up with some of these ideas.
Yeah, she's a real spark plug. I tell folks that I wouldn't be chairman if I wasn't married to Cindy, because I think people say that, well, he can't be such a bad guy to be if he's married to Cindy. So. Yeah, she's a great help all the time, and we work as a team. Exactly what we do, and we met on we lost both our spouses over the years, and so we met on a trail ride a few years back, and so we met on horses, and it's horses are our life. So. There you go.
All right, well, I keep telling these guys out there, if you want to meet some really nice women, get out on the trails, because about 76% of the riders are women. So
yeah.
It helps us so ugly guys to have the odds in our favor when we're out that way. So that's a good thing. We want to take a quick break and listen to a song called Under a Rolling Sky. I mean, all of the things that we do and are involved with are so that we can continue to enjoy being out and enjoying this country. And this one by our friend Michael Martin Murphy. But when we come back, Jim, I'd like to talk a little bit about some important legislation that is pending, and really what it means and how people could get involved in helping with that. So we're talking with Jim McGarvey, chairman of Backcountry Horsemen of America, and you're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio.
It's a perfect day to lose our way, watching the world drifting by, living without asking why. What will be, it's a mystery. I knew there is no need to explain, it'll all wash away in the rain. So let it go where it will flow, leave all the stars far behind till you lose all track of time. What love really means, everything will
Michael Martin Murphy's Under a Rolling Sky, and Jim, I just got a text message that said I need to mention our new Legacy Club, and we have started a Legacy Club for our listeners and our friends and fans out there. It is a free membership, and for our Legacy Club members, you receive discounts from our Legacy Club sponsors. We have monthly drawings for great prizes from our select sponsors. And then if you are a Legacy Club member, you're automatically entered in those drawings. And we have a great year-end drawing for a two-horse portable water system from our premier sponsor, HydroHorse. And you can visit them at HydroHorse.com for more information on this revolutionary watering system. But to enroll in the free Legacy Club and take advantage of the drawings for the great prizes and to receive discounts from our Legacy Club sponsors, just visit our website at equestrianlegacy.net. So, you know, we've been kind of overwhelmed. We just announced this club, Jim, about 2 days ago, and the memberships just keep flooding in. So we're tickled to death for that.
Great,
yeah,
Gary.
So some great benefits for folks. And it's our thank you just for listening to the show and joining us in our conversation with folks. So, but anyway, let's talk a little bit, Jim, about the legislation that is pending right now. And I think, is this something that you're working with the Wilderness Society?
It is, yeah. We're very close partners with the Wilderness Society. And this started about 3 years ago with one of our well-thought-of members, Dennis Daly in Wyoming, took the Wyoming Congresswoman's staff out for a trail ride and to show the poor condition of some of the trails in National Forest. And Dennis had been with the Forest Service for 35 years, mostly working in the wilderness areas, and a great horseman. And they went ahead, the congressman from Wyoming and Idaho and Virginia, and asked the General Accountability Office to do a study of the trail maintenance backlog, and they found, they quantified it. It came out last summer, the report, and most of the trails, vast majority of the trails have not maintained a standard. Some are in deteriorating conditions, and a lot of it has to do with the flat budget. The trees keep growing, but the budget stays the same, and
right.
or less. And with the wildfires out west that they're taking dollars and manpower, it's becoming an untenable situation. So knowing that we couldn't ask for discretionary increase in funding from Congress in today's world and maybe never, that we went together, Wilderness Society, went through this report and working very closely, put together a group of recommendations, both with our partners in the Forest Service, we worked with them closely, and also legislative language, and that was sponsored by Congresswoman Lummis of Idaho and Waltz of Minnesota. And we now have 17 co-sponsors at last count. And it's bipartisan. The Minnesota congressman is a Democrat and Wyoming is Republican. It's bipartisan because there's no ask for money. It's based on volunteers and cooperation with the Forest Service. Increasing in volunteering itself is not going to cure this, but it's just a start. And it's called House Rule. H.R., House Bill, it's H.R. 4886. That's 4886. And is a possibility of it getting passed this year. If folks can Google that, H.R. 4886 for 2014, and it in the 2113th Congress. And if you have a contact with a staff or a congressman or a senator, please give them a call, send them an email or a letter encouraging them to look at this. It's just 11 pages, and it's mainly encouraging the Forest Service and some legislative language needed to take better advantage of the volunteer resources that are out there, at least try to maximize them across the 155 national forests. And we're very excited about the progress it's making, and I think the Forest Service is too. Have visited in Washington a couple of times this summer, and we're very excited about it. So ask everybody listening to send their cards and letters on H.R. 4886. It's called the National Forest Trail Stewardship Act.
Okay.
Forest Trail Stewardship Act. So it's bipartisan. We're not asking for money, but it's we're working at it. So,
well,
it's a couple of years project here.
Yeah, it's a challenge to get some of this legislation through. And even though you're not asking for funds, people still need to be encouraged. And so we'd encourage our listeners to get involved. Call your congressperson, ask them to support this bill. And, of course, a lot of times the big thing is just getting them to bring it to a vote, isn't it?
It is. And there's a one way that these do work. It's called the consent rule. And if there's no objection, it gets passed out of the Natural Resources Committee. It can be voted on unanimous consent if no one objects. And that's a possibility. So instead of it being debated on the floor and, you know, going the way of trail dust, I guess you might
right,
say,
right.
This actually could pass with enough co-sponsors this year through a consent action. And that's maybe another term for folks to Google. But it's a matter of some of these non-controversial bills, they do go through, and they do keep the lights on in the government. So we're hoping that might be the path. And it needs some more co-sponsors, needs some help in the Senate to get it not only out of Congress but or out of the representatives, but also to the senators. So, but we got some high hopes.
Well, good, good. Well, tell our listeners why it's important for them to get involved and support this.
Yeah, in the national parks, this case, it happens to be the national forest is the topic of the GAO study, but the national parks are facing the same thing, and the state parks, there's just not enough funding. We're losing our trails, and we're going to be losing the horse trails first. There's other users out there. There's the hikers, the mountain bikers, families. There's runners. I mean, there's a lot of different users out there, hunters and fishermen and et cetera. But the horses can go some places that if those horse trails go, we lose access to the wilderness. We'll lose access to the front country, where a lot of our listeners, a lot of the horse people, to get to the back country, you have to start in the front country. So
right,
it's a lot of front country riding, which might be considered east of the Mississippi and where a lot of the horses and riders are. So it's important to keep those going. And as you mentioned earlier, I think you hit a good point there, that if one section, let's say the three-legged stool of the horse industry generally is the trail people, which is a big leg.
Right.
The other is the arena folks, and others can be the racing and more competitive, financially competitive parts of the industry. But eventually, all the horses go to pasture and go to trails. There's a lot of – we had a racehorse with a thoroughbred with, with the number on his under his lip, tattooed
right.
under his lip, and with Nates. I mean, they all a lot of this competitive horses end up on trails, and it keeps the prices up, keeps the care of the horses, and we're going to lose them. And it's going to be the horses because the public agencies, the National Park Service, the Forest Service, and that fewer and fewer of their employees and staff and management are horse oriented anymore. It's not like the old days,
right?
The folks come from everywhere, from cities that work for them, and they don't quite understand completely the life we live with horses. And
right.
So we got to be out there. So.
Well, again, regardless of what your discipline is, it's important to keep these trails open to try to gain some new trails, and we all know of situations where trails in our part of the country have been closed to horse use, and it always comes back down primarily to having the funds to keep those trails maintained so that they can stay open. So again, H.R. 4886 is the House bill that you need to call your congresspeople about. A lot of you will see them out during this break and recess they're on. So if you see them personally, put the bug in the ear, but get on the phone and make some phone calls and ask them to support this. And a good time to be doing that. They can get some things done when they come back in session in a few weeks. So we'd encourage that as well. What else is going on with backcountry horsemen?
Well, there's one that's kind of it's an odd word. It's called FLREA. It's the FLREA, the Federal Lands Recreation Enhancement Act, and that's coming up for reauthorization. And that's the instance, again, in the national parks and forests and the federal lands, where they'll charge, let's say, a $5 parking fee at the trailhead or that type of thing, if it's an improved trailhead with an outhouse, or, you know, more modern outhouse, or facilities, just enhanced facilities. And so we're watching that very closely. For the first time, the word horse riders have been in the legislation. It was sort of inferred that we were out there. They didn't name every user that goes down a trail, but this year we've gotten so far the language we're in. And the idea with FLREA is that 80% of the funds go back to the local, if not that parking lot, at least to the ranger district or the federal agency, tries to keep it close to where it was collected. What we're watching very closely is that they don't charge for access, like just go down a Forest Service road and then pull off, if it's a good place, and ride into on a trail and go into the woods. It's called a bridle fee, and we watch it very closely. It's a bit of a controversial fee because of the nature of, well, we pay our taxes, so why should they charge a fee? You know, so it's all over the spectrum, not only, I mean, with all users in the public lands, not just horse people, but it'll probably pass. It's been 100 years this year that the government started charging somebody something to get on a public land in the national parks and that, so it's kind of the centenary here of this kind of thing. So we're watching that. It will go through, we're almost certain, but it's just want to make sure that the language helps the horses. And then something else I've been working on that's really interesting, and a lot of folks don't know about it, but about 4 years ago, the president the White House came out with called the Great Outdoors Initiative, and it was just to get folks away from the TVs and video games and out in public, you know, just anywhere outside. So the backcountry horseman, the chairman, Terry Morrison from Utah at the time, went to the White House and for other activities in Washington to kick this off. And so it's been going along. And this summer, another acronym, pardon me, it's called FICOR, the Federal Interagency on Recreation, Federal Interagency Council on Recreation, which is the six land managers of the federal government, you know, Corps of Engineers, Bureau of Land Manager, Forest Service, Park Service, and Fisheries, and they invited, there was three meetings this summer. It started out with about 35 outdoor users, so canoe people, the Wilderness Society, a lot of, just almost you name it, there was folks that were out there, for instance, the Vail Corporation, because they use Forest Service land, and they're using it all year round now for activities. But to keep in mind here why this is important and why we, the backcountry horsemen, need to stick to it, we are the only horse-oriented organization at the table in this.
Wow. Place.
And so it's like we're defending the horses in the outdoors. I mean, it's the back guys, what we're doing, the backcountry horsemen. We've been a strong participant. I make sure, and our folks make sure that our voice is heard. And we're in a great arrangement. A great relationship with the federal agencies. We have memorandums of understanding with them, and our partner, the Wilderness Society, is also at that table. But it's the last meeting, there were just 12 outside groups, and that's all that were invited. At Washington. So keep that in mind. It's the Great Outdoors Initiative, and there's several parts to it, but we're doing our part to keep the trails and the horses out there on the public lands.
Well, that's great. Well, we do have to have a seat at the table. If not, we'll always take a back seat to some of the other interests out there. And I think it's great that backcountry horsemen understand that we have to be working with these other groups so we can all enjoy access to what really is our American heritage and legacy, and that's continued use of public lands that we get to enjoy. Our time has run out again. We're just, time goes by too quickly. I do want to mention that we are just excited to death to have partnered with Backcountry Horsemen of America to be on our program every month. And we're going to be shifting over in September. We started a new program this past Tuesday night called Saddle Up America. And that program is dedicated to the trail riders, which are about 90% of the horse people out there. And we're tickled to death to have Backcountry Horsemen to become part of that show beginning the first Tuesday night in September. So, Jim, we're looking forward to talking with you the first Tuesday in September. So that's going to be a lot of fun. We've got some other partners that are joining us on there. One is Robert Eversole, who is known as the Trailmeister, and he's been real active with Backcountry Horsemen, particularly in Washington, and speaks a lot of places with Backcountry Horsemen. So he's a regular guest. And then Susanna Gibson, who is the publisher of Trailblazer Magazine, is joining us for a regular segment. So we have the who's who that are joining us on Tuesday nights for Saddle Up America, and as well as visiting with great riding destinations across the country. So we look forward to that, Jim, and as always, enjoy having you on the show. You always have great information.
Thank you, Gary.
And we'll talk to you again the first Tuesday night in September.
Well, thank you, Gary. Hello, everybody. Thank you.
All right. Talk with you soon. Thanks so much. Well, I hope you've enjoyed our show today. We've enjoyed talking with Gene Prescott from out in Texas, and then with Jim McGarvey, who's the chairman of Backcountry Horsemen of America. We do want to remind you again that Saddle Up America is a new show that we bring you on Tuesday nights at 7 o'clock Central Time. We'll have great riding destinations across the country and great guests like Jim and Robert and Susanna that will bring us information. We'll be playing trail trivia to win great gifts from our show sponsors, and we gave away a great gift pack from Hispania Silk to a young lady in Mississippi. But join us this week because we have a great savvy highline system that somebody will win. This is from our sponsor, Camp with Horses. So that's Tuesday night at 7 p.m. Central Time, and Tina Mae Weber, a great trail rider, is our co-host for that show, so we're happy to have Tina Mae joining us as well on that show. Next week on Equestrian Legacy Radio for our Thursday show, we're tickled to have joining us Eddie Floyd, who is the radio personality with America Matters. He's heavily involved with wild horses and the wild Mustang preservation. We'll be joined by Eddie to talk about what they're doing there. Lacey J. Dalton will be our musical guest, and Lacey is also involved with the horse rescues and the wild Mustangs. And then we'll be talking about an exciting new movie called Final Breath that features ranching life and how the wild Mustangs interact with the ranchers. So a great show coming up next Thursday at noon Central Standard Time on Equestrian Legacy Radio. We remind you, as always, if you climb in the saddle, get ready for the ride. And thanks for listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio.
Not that I don't want you around. This